Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Nation Building Presents. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I would like to greet the audience and my distinguished panel in our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you, sir. And who is this that we have with us tonight? I think this is Southwest Regional Student Minister Robert Muhammad. Sir, how are you?
I'm fine by Allah's grace and permission, dear sister, and honored to be a part of this program.
Well, Brother Minister, of course, as you well know, I have been trying to get you on for quite some time, and I am very honored tonight to have the opportunity to sit with you and interview you. We've had many conversations over the years, but never in this format. So we're going to roll with it and see how we do in this atmosphere. You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to give an extended greeting to my nation building family. I also would like to give an extended greeting to my Kenyan family, Hajabu, my Nigerian cousins. I would like to say Kudu, my cousin Bunsue, and particularly thank you for your prayers and your support. As y'all know, my son has been hospitalized for a few days. He's critically ill. I want to thank everybody for their prayers and their support. I love you all, and thank you all so very much. Okay, Brother Minister, I wanted you on really because I had the opportunity to have you on a previous show briefly, and you had mentioned something that just really stayed with me, and you know that's not unusual. You talked about many things over the years that have stayed with me. But you talked about one time sitting down, having coffee and bean pie and talking about the separation. And you mentioned that because you said that we often stand with those victims of those families of victims who have been, you know, treated unjustly or slain children by whatever circumstances, and that there is a time that we're going to have to separate. So in the realization of the times and the man and the plan, we have to raise our minds to elevated places in order to sit on high and mentally look down low and see the big picture. Because surely we are the people of the book. So I want to know from you, Brother Minister, how do we get into the thinking of God, and how do we get to that elevated mental process?
All right. Well, first of all, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness there's no God but Allah, who came in the person of Master Prophet Muhammad. I bear witness to Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his messenger, Messiah, and exalted Christ. And I further bear witness to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the divine reminder, and Jesus in our midst. And I greet you, my sister, assalamu alaikum. To answer your
question, sir.
To answer your question most succinctly, and right to the point, is the supreme wisdom. The lessons by Master Prophet Muhammad to his servant, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, for the lost found nation of Islam in North America. That, number one, is how you get into the mind of God. I say that simply because Master Farah Muhammad studied for 42 years, as taught to us by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. And his father went around and gathered from all of the greatest libraries and scholars of the world the greatest books and teachings. Now, we don't know the names of those books. He gave the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad a book, a list of 104 books to read. But in most cases, we don't know all the names of any of those books that he was told to read. We know what the theme of it was, but we don't know what the names of those books were. And in one sense, why do we need to know that, as Minister Farrakhan pointed out? And why do we need to know every book that was in the library that Master Farah Muhammad's father gave him in preparation for his mission? We don't need to know that. If we want to know what it is, we have to look at the supreme wisdom, which is a synthesis of everything that Master Farah Muhammad studied in preparation for his mission. And what he did was, instead of carrying around a whole library of books, which would probably have filled up a ocean liner, instead of him bringing us everything that he learned from visiting every inhabited continent on this planet, instead of him writing in the 10 languages that he wrote in, and or speaking to us in the 16 languages he could speak in, instead of that, all he did was he left us with the supreme wisdom. This supreme wisdom, sister and dear listening audience, is actually a portal into the mind of God. On the level of physics, there are four dimensions. There's the linear dimension, which where we understand that, for instance, a mile is 5,280 feet long. That's how long a mile is. That's linear, one point to one point. And then there's square mileage. We're taught that the Earth is 196,940,000 square miles. We learn square miles. That means 5,280 by 5,280. And so we know square miles. And then there's cubic mile, which, of course, would be for us 5,280 by 5,280 by 5,280 deep cubic miles. But then there's time. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, time is the measurement of motion between two points, or in physics it would be said to be the measurement of physical change or change of an object. So you have linear, you have plane, you have cubic, and you have space. But then there's another dimension, and some are called the fifth dimension, and I'm not talking about the Age of Aquarius or Stone Soul Picnic. Fifth dimension.
Yes.
What I'm talking about is the dimension that opens and closes, and it is hidden, and it is how, where we read in the Quran, and I'm not getting spooky, nor am I getting too deep for this listening audience that will tune into such a show. It is that dimension in which, when the Holy Quran says that Allah is he who takes men's souls at night. How did Muhammad leave Mecca, go to Jerusalem, and go to heaven in one night? When is your soul go when Allah takes it, and that those that he does not decree death upon, he returns those souls for an appointed term? But where did your soul go? You see, how was it that Jesus knew what his enemies were thinking, and when they came that way, he went that way? What is this radio in the head that is talked about in the true history of Jesus? And what is it that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is talking about in theology of time, the ability to tune up on people, particularly a survival technique or survival tool that we're going to need when this final conflict gets very, very heated? How will we know where to go? How will we know what to do? How will we know to stay in? How will we know to get out? How will we know not to be at this stadium or not to be at this particular public place or not to be in that place or that place? We're going to have to really be tuned up and in sync with the mind of God. But how does that happen? We have what are called Lost Found Muslim Lessons, but it starts with, I don't want to get deep, we don't have to go to the problem book. Start with the student enrollment that the Honorable Louis Farrakhan talked to us about during Education and Land or the Educational Conference when he gave his address. I urge everyone that's on this line to go back and re-listen and review that tape again. Student enrollment. In parentheses, rules of Islam. The rules are the way you approach a thing. They're kind of like your guidelines. So when we look at the student enrollment, dear sister, we got to understand that the student enrollment is written in a way of the ancient Egyptian mystery systems, which the Greeks stole, which is called dialectics. Dialectics. You've heard it. You've heard that word when you talk about dialectic materialism that's associated with Karl Marx. But dialectics is a system of arriving at truth through questions and answers. Our whole student enrollment and our lessons one and lesson two is in questions and answers. So it's the way in which you arrive at truth through questions and answers. But when you look at our student enrollment, rules of Islam, the following questions must be answered 100% before submittance of student to said lesson number one. When you look at question number one and number two is, who's the original man, who's the colored man? So what God is trying to teach us is that there are differences. There are differences. And you're going to have the analytical ability to know the difference between one and the other. Then he asked us, what is the population of the original nation of the wilderness of North America and all over the planet Earth? And what is the population of the colored people in the wilderness of North America and all over the planet Earth? He wants us to know that, yes, I'm going to continue in that line of discussion where I'm trying to show you and tell you that in fact and indeed, there are differences, but let me tell you what those differences are. They are quantum differences, meaning they are numerical differences that actually can be measured. And when we look at it, our population is 17 million with the 2 million Indians, but all over the planet Earth is 4,400,000. And then what is the population of the colored people of America and all over the planet Earth? And it goes on to talk about 103 million, and all over the planet Earth is 400 million. So now we're looking at this qualitative difference, but in that quantitative difference is an inferential statistics. What can you infer from those two questions and answers? You can infer that, yes, we're outnumbered in the wilderness of North America at that time, 19 million to 103 million. But then when you look all over the planet Earth, we have 4 billion 400 million. They've got 400 million. So now you can infer from that that if they draw a circle here in America to keep us out, we can draw a bigger circle around the globe to keep them in. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So you go on further, and you look in your question number five, which is the square mileage of the planet Earth, and then again we've getting this analytical difference for us to know differences. What is the land? What is the water? And then we're asked what the exact square miles of useful land that is used every day by the total population of the planet Earth. So not just we want to know the difference between land and water, we want to know the qualitative difference in land. And we know of the 57,255,000 square miles of land, that 29 million, of it that's used every day by the total population of the planet Earth is useful. And of that, we want to know not only how much of it is useful, who uses it. We know that the original man uses 23 million, according to the next question and answer, and that, the colored man uses 6 million of it. And then we get back again into time. The said Nation of Islam has no birth record. It has no beginning nor ending. So now that gives you an idea of the fact that, my God, we have infinity before. If there's no beginning, that's infinity before. And no ending, there's infinity behind us. So what is it that we're dealing with here? We're dealing with a linear time model that there is point A and point B. So then we're asked, what is the birth record of said others in Islam? And it tells us that Buddhism is 35,000 years old. Christianity is 551 years old. Now, you look at Buddhism, we're in the 15,000th year of a 25,000-year cycle of history. We're in that right now. So that means that Buddhism is 35,000 years old, dear sister. That means that Buddhism goes to year one, think about it, that's 15,000, and then another 20,000 years into the last cycle of history. That means it started in the 5,000th year of the last cycle of history. Now, we look at Christianity, and you have to ask yourself the question, that seems pretty odd, that if B.C. means before Christ, and why did Musa have a hard time civilizing the devil 2,000 B.C., and B.C. means before Christ, then why would they say that Christianity, why would the answer to student Romans say that Christianity is 551 years old? Well, when you subtract 551 from 1934, you know, you get like 1383, something like that. And there's a man by the name of John Wycliffe that when you search the root of Christianity, particularly separation of church and state, particularly when you think about the Protestant Reformation, at the root of it is this man, John Wycliffe. And I found him in the history of political thought. So my point that I'm trying to make for us is, as students, we got to re-enroll back into the University of Islam, and it begins with the student enrollment. When you look at the student enrollment, dear brothers and sisters, we're looking at the beginning, the seminal stages, the beginning of our spiritual and mental separation. But we cannot approach this in a KV way or in a quote-unquote Western European Christian mindset. Master Farah Muhammad comes to make all things new, and the only way we're going to make all things new is we've got to have a renewing of our mind. So we've got to take off the old man that's after this world. We've got to put on the new man that Master Farah Muhammad is making in the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad when he asks, who is the original man? And as the minister has said, He is coming, or he is yet to appear, in so much as we are now have to grow into the ability and the power to master that which our Father in the beginning created, which is the whole universe. So it said in the answer, that he is the maker. He's the Asiatic black man, the maker, the owner, the cream of the planet Earth, God of the universe. So that means right there that the beginning of it begins with the study of the student enrollment, actual facts, the lessons, and God knows you don't want to get off into the problem book until we're ready for it. But I'm telling you, I'll talk about that. There's some stuff in the problem book, as Brother Ishmael hit on it, but we've done two lectures this past couple of weeks on education, the basis of is the torchlight of civilization. Well, it dawned on me, what happened when the Caucasian FBI arrested the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad May 8th, 1942, and they took his briefcase from him with his lessons and all of that? What were them white people thinking when they opened up that briefcase? And they knew that they had a man that they didn't educate, a man with a third, fourth grade education. Now, think about a third, fourth grader. That means that he had the education level of your nine-year-old.
Right.
Now, if you told your nine-year-old, baby, come here, give me your backpack, let me see what you got in it. And you open up your baby's backpack, and they had something in their backpack about nuclear engineering, cracking an atom in the 10 million parts. Or they had something in there about the length or the cost of stocks in the Panama Canal, in the building of the Panama Canal. Or they had something in their lessons about genetic engineering, grafting people. Or they had something in there, like it's in problem number 26 of the great problem book, where you got in here, it says total atoms equal 10, and then here's a number with 78 ciphers behind it. And then it asks the question, how many atoms are there in North America? 78 ciphers. Do you know what that number is? That number is 10 quinquagigatillion. Listen to me again. 10,
okay, say that again. Say that again.
10 quinquagigatillion. That's the number. 10
wow.
Quin, Q-U-I-N, Quay, mm-hmm. Q-U-A, Vigin, V-I-G-I-N, Tillion, T-I-L-L-I-O-N. 10 quinquagigatillion. Now, here is a man with a fourth-grade education, third-grade education, because he never finished the fourth grade. Total atoms equals 10 quinquagigatillion. How many atoms are there in North America? Where did a man with a third-grade education get this stuff?
Yes, sir.
Who taught him? You would want to know who his teacher is. So eventually the FBI did launch an extensive search, and Dr. Wesley Muhammad wrote the book of Master Farah Muhammad, Who He Is and Who He Isn't. When you look at all the FBI files, these people went to every great length to find where Master Farah Muhammad was, because they had to know, well, they had to know the whereabouts of his teacher. Who taught this man? What is he doing with this kind of information? How did a man back in the 1940s know, or really 1930s, since he got it from him in 1930s, but in their hands, 1940s, how did a man know that Mars was 141,500,000 miles from the sun and was 4,000 miles in its diameter? I mean, come on. We've got to ask ourselves the question. You know something?
But let me ask you, Brother Minister.
I'm sorry, but
let me ask you, because, you know, I hear everything that you're saying, and, you know, but I wanted to also speak to the time, because, you know, we're at a critical time for our people right now, and so those lessons that are so precious and that are so valuable to our survival as a people, how do we reach across the aisle with those who may differ in faith, but they are still our people, to get them to understand, you know, who the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is, and to teach those very lessons to them? Because, you know, people get fickle when it comes to faith. You know, they want to stay in the church, they want to stay in, you know, in the Roman Catholic, whatever it is, they want to stay in the synagogue or wherever they are. They get very comfortable there. But when it comes time for a separation, because there's going to be an occurrence to whereas we are going to have to separate. And so how do we bridge that gap of understanding between those that may be Christian or other faiths to get them to understand the teachings and the direction that we need to go in?
Well, it's simple. It's in Instruction of the Laborers, number 3, where it says, no man can be successful in teaching the people that cannot speak clearly the people's language. Not their language, the people's language. So you have to have the ability to go into what they believe and explain to them what their prophets, messengers, and warners brought and tie it to what God has revealed to us through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You got to speak the language of the people. So if I'm sitting down with a Christian, I'm not quoting the Quran. I can have a Quranic mindset, but I'm quoting out of the Bible. Because that's his book. That's her book. If I'm talking to somebody who is a Hebrew, excuse me, and I'm not trying to quote the Quran to them. Let me go to what your book says. And Allah has made a messenger and a warner among every nation. But what Messenger Muhammad has given us is he's given us a universal message, but it's bundled in some language that's like a formula, that's almost like a MRE, like one of those meals they give you when you have a natural disaster, and it's like instant meal, put some water on it. Well, this wisdom has to be unbundled. You know, at a certain point in time, the first step is we have to work on memorizing it by heart. And then what happens is at that particular point, then you're able, like for instance, our student enrollment, we're told to recite the answers 100%. Then, but not one of these questions, is there a why in there? Why I got to do this? Why I got to do that? There's no why in this. You're asked, who is the original man? Who is the colored man? What is the population? You know, what is the area in square miles? How much is the land? How much is the water? What are the exact square miles of useful land? How much is useful land is used? What is the birth record? There ain't no whys in there. You get into the whys when you get into lesson number 1. Then you're asked why. Why isn't the devil settled in the best part of the earth? Why did Musa have a hard time civilizing the devil 2000 B.C.? Why did we let half original man Columbus discover the poor part of the earth? You then begin to get into the whys. And that takes you on a whole nother level. And again, when I say it, man, that problem book is a whole nother nut to crack. But the point I'm making to you, dear sister, is that we have to learn, first of all, you and I have to let our minds be renewed by the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know. And why do we call it the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? Master Farah Muhammad raised up 25,000 followers in Detroit. Gave them holy names. Then why do we call it the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad? He's the only one that saw him as God in person.
That's right.
That's why we call it the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He saw him as he is. So the Bible says it like this. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. So Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a certain quality of heart that allowed him to see that the person that was talking, and sometimes talking in the third person, Allah would do this and Allah would do that. He saw him as talking about himself, and that's what he went up and whispered to him when he shook his hand on September 22nd, 1931. So, dear sister, it comes down to us being able to speak the language of the people. And and sometimes when I go and I speak in the federal prisons, I tell the brothers, you know, you got to learn the torch-like language. You know, Master Farah Muhammad gave us a language in a certain kind of way. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has told us in our instruction laborers that we shouldn't use baby language. And at a certain point in time, we're going to learn have to ask ourselves the question, why did the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, after all these years of teaching the white man is the devil this and the white man is the devil that, tell the minister, don't use that language anymore. Call him the slave master's children. Call him Satan. Call him that. No, why didn't he call him? Why is he devil? Why are we using that language? Because at a certain point in time, you've got to take it on a whole nother level. And lastly, just closing this point, during Savior's Day last year, he said, Torchlight for America. He was talking about leadership. He was talking about greed and inordinate self-interest, and he was talking about greed. He said, I wrote that in Torchlight for America. He said, you thought I wrote that for America, but I wrote it for the nation.
Hmm.
We need to pick back up some of this stuff that we take for granted and reintroduce ourselves to it, particularly at the level that we're at. You know, you're not the same sister that I met years ago, dear sister. You're a different woman who has grown, got grandchildren and all. You're a different person than recited to us to get your ex or to register in the Nation of Islam. So as a different person, more mature, experienced, knowledgeable Muslim, go back and look at the student enrollment in actual fact and tell me what you see in it today that you didn't see in it back when you recited to us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ooh, okay. I'm going to check with Sister Khadijah, and I want to take the time right now to thank Sister Khadijah. Our regular engineer, DJ Black Caesar, had an emergency. He had to leave, and Sister Khadijah, all the way from Michigan, volunteered to work our board tonight. Sister Khadijah, can you unmute your phone and allow us to introduce you and come give the family the greeting?
Assalamu alaikum. I am here. Peace and blessings to everyone listening.
Thank you, Sister Khadijah. And what part of Michigan are you from, Queen?
Well, I'm originally from California. I live in Flint, Michigan.
Okay, you live in Flint. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you, Queen. We really appreciate you coming on at the last minute. Thank you for your technical skills and your willingness and your beautiful spirit. Thank you so much. And we're going to check right now, Sister Khadijah, are there any callers on the line? Did anybody press 1 to ask a question?
I don't see any. Well, right then and there, just as you asked, we got a caller from 770-207.
Okay.
I'm going to bring him on the line right now.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, sir. And who are we speaking to?
This is Brother Jihad Muhammad from Atlanta, Georgia.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jihad. How are you?
I'm fine, thank Allah, ma'am. And yourself?
I am blessed by Allah's grace. This is Brother Jihad Muhammad out of Atlanta. He's the host of the Real FOI show on Tuesday night. You have a question for Brother Minister Robert?
I sure do, Brother Robert. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Jihad.
I want to ask a question. How do we, the Nation of Islam, it kind of goes with what Sister Gidget was asking about our people, but this one is more closer to home. As it relates to the believers of the mosque, the Nation of Islam, how do we get our people to make the transition from mosque thinking to nation thinking, nation building? Like what it talks about, point number 12, that Allah will set up a universal government. How do we get our people in the mosque? Because there seems to be a struggle with mosque identity and relating that into nation building, like for example, building a city, building a state, building a country.
Okay.
And I'll sit back and listen.
Yes, sir, brother. I think it begins with this, dear brother. Again, and once again, I go back to taking on the mind of God in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, and not having a cavy Western European framework. Islam is everything. Islam is the universe is everything. Sun, moon, and stars, but Islam is everything. Islam is a way of life. It's not a religion. And the problem is, you know, we come into the mosque with a church mentality. And if we understood that Islam is everything, but the center of our consciousness is righteousness and God-centered thinking. When Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, ran from Mecca to Medina, one of the things that he established first was the mosque. So that's the beginning. But next to the mosque, he established the souk, or the market. Souk is S-U-Q. The market was established right by the mosque. Because when the call to prayer was made by Bilal, you could put up your business, put a towel or a sheet over your business, come make your prayer, and then go back to doing business again. And then beyond the mosque and the market, he set up apartments that were in quarters. Now, this is it's a kind of a myth in our thinking that somehow Islam is some integrated, holistic, kumbaya kind of religion. Yes, we all fast during Ramadan. Yes, when we come to Jumu'ah prayer, don't matter what color you are, race, race or class that you're in, we all line up and pray the same way. And yes, we all give zakat. And yes, we all read from the Holy Quran. And yes, we all follow the same prayer steps and words that are in the prayer. But when Muhammad set up the city of Medina, there were quarters, meaning that every tribe had its own quarter. That means that everybody didn't live together. They lived according to their clan, their tribe, or their geographical relationship. They lived together, but they all lived into this city of Medina and operated under the one banner of Islam and under the Prophet banner that there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his messenger. How do we translate this? We got to get rid of the old Christian mind. And it's not bad. I'm talking about Western European Christian mind, because the truth of the matter is that all religions have their root in the original man, but it has been subverted, and this is why we have to look very closely into that Christianity being 551 years old. We got to look very carefully into that. What does that mean? What changed from what Jesus taught? Jesus' teaching was not Christianity. It was freedom, justice, and equality. So if what Jesus taught is not what's being taught in his name, then we got to give up that which was given that was being taught in his name, which is not clean or wholesome, and we've got to accept what Jesus really taught and begin to approach it that way. Now, one of the things this educational system does, unfortunately, it makes our people dislike math, it makes our people dislike science, and especially we hate history. Oh, my God. Why? Because who the hell wants to hear about Columbus? Who wants to hear about Columbus? But now I'm more interested in Columbus than I ever been, because why did we let half original man Columbus discover the poor part of planet Earth? Whoa. That's a history lesson. And who were the people they found? He found the Indians here who were exiled 16,000 years ago from India. They are original people. Well, how did they get here from India? Now that makes me now begin to study history and anthropology and all of that. I'm saying all of this, Brother Jihad, to say this, is that our people have been made to hate the very things that are the basis of nation building. Math and science, engineering is the basis of nation building. How can you get a people who have been made through this educational system to hate or to think that they can't comprehend math and science? How can you get a people, when the Honorable Najman says history is best qualified and most attractive to reward our research, he taught Malcolm that. He taught the ministers that in 36. And he taught the ministers that in the 60s as he reintroduced that letter to them. What do you mean you don't like history? Well, the Honorable Najman said we'll never be successful unless we learn the history of our people before the making of the white man. Said that and our saviors arrived. So we have to then put another mind in our people. We got to take out that old Frankenstein abnormal brain that was put in them by our enemy that makes them destructive of self and others, and we got to put in God's mind in them. Our people have to be reprogrammed. And the poor Muslims, see, we're Muslims on the surface. Bow tie, headpiece wearing. Muslims on the surface. But our actions, our thoughts, our folkways, our mores, our norms, our values, our attitudes are still, we got one foot in this world. Once we begin to think, what does God want? What does Master Farah Khan want? What did he come here for? He called us a nation, Minister Farah Khan said. He gave us a flag. We salute the flag. Do we understand what we're doing when we salute that flag? Are we really consciously saluting that flag, or are we just doing something robotic because we all taught to do that? Do you understand what you're saying when you salute that flag, when you take a pledge to that flag, what it is that you're really saying? Do we understand what happens when we come to the mosque and we get checked or we go through a search procedure, that you're actually going through a border crossing like you would entering into a sovereign nation?
Yes, sir.
That everything that we're being done, that's being done to us, is to teach us self-sufficiency, self-government. Do you know that when we excuse somebody from the society based upon our own restrictive laws, it's because we're exercising judicial power? Please.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, we gotta look at what we got and stop looking at the glass half empty or the glass half full. And we gotta understand that what Master Prophet Muhammad gave us, we're surface dwellers. That's the problem. The problem is that we and I'm saying we. I'm not saying you and not me. I'm deep. I'm not deep. I'm with you. We're dwelling on the surface. We're in the realm of square mileage, meaning we're on the surface. But we're not digging deep enough. We're not going cubic. We're not seeking the depth of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. Oh, I read Message of the Black Man. Oh, I read Closing the Gap. Oh, I read Torchlight for America. Oh, I've been through my lessons. Yeah, okay, well, that's good. You better revisit all of that again. We better revisit all of this again. Do you know that the study guides in and of itself is the Sunnah of Minister Farrakhan along with Closing the Gap? Do you know that that man revealed himself and his own struggles in those study guides? And if we were studying some study guys, we would know his way. Mixed feelings and controversy. How do you handle it? Struggle for balance. Building the will. Huh? Whose will? Allah is the center of everything. You know, the God within. Huh? Rise above emotion into the thinking of God. Come on, y'all. We got, you know, conspiracy and hypocrisy. You know, what, oh, my God, the characteristics of humility. He's the essence of the characteristics of humility when he takes plenty from us. The law of God. All of these study guides is his sunnah. It's him. You're reading the study guides, you're reading him. Closing the gap, you're learning his way. And we got to close that gap, and we got to close it quickly. Mr. Farrakhan is the man whose rep and swag we're living off of. And I'm convinced after reading John, the 7th chapter, we're really not going to come into our own until he goes back to him who is directing him now. Once he's gone and he sends back a certain kind of, we got to be prepare ourselves through fasting, through prayer, through study, to receive the word that he's going to send back to each and every one of us if we prepare ourselves. There's going to be an outpouring of a spirit of the mind of Allah that's going to have us literally sitting in a room together, not saying a word, but looking at each other and knowing what each other's thinking.
Yes, sir.
We're in this room. We need to get the hell up out of here.
Okay. Is Brother Jihad, are you still on the phone? If he's still on the phone, Sister Khadija, can you open his mic?
Yes, he's on the line.
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Brother Jihad.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you stand by with me? For a minute.
Okay.
Okay, because you know what my phone gonna do, right? So, you know, I need you to keep it flowing. That's why I had called you earlier.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't get the message.
That's okay. All right, Brother Minister.
We got another hand up. Area code 601562.
Okay. Go ahead with your question.
I don't have a question. Assalamu alaikum, family.
Assalamu alaikum. This is our chief, our CEO, our founder of Nation Building. This is Brother Rakim Khalik Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Walaikum salam, my sister. Walaikum salam.
Now, I'm so glad that you're here.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I'm going to tell everybody now, since we all three on the phone, Brother Minister Robert.
Ma'am.
You know you're part of the triplet clique, right?
I am? Okay.
You know that you, myself, and Brother Rakim, we were all born on December 6th.
Wow.
Sister Gidget, let me put it to you in street terms. I'm not gonna curse. I'm not gonna say nothing out the way. But we are the real 3-6 mafia. We the real 3-6 mafia.
Yes, we are. I told them to look out if all three of us were ever on the phone at one time. It's going to be an issue.
Oh, yes, it will. Yes, it will. Brother Minister Robert, how you doing, brother?
Yes, sir. Fine by law's grace, beloved.
Yes, sir. Good. It's good to hear your voice, brother. It's good to hear your voice, and I am so happy you chose to come on the show with us once again, you know, to speak that wisdom, brother. I mean, I love it. I'm enjoying it.
All praise is due to Allah, beloved. You know, I just want to add, too, Sister Gidget's been after me for a minute, and I just wanted to make my word my bond and try to do all that I can to help the Honorable Louis Farrakhan and those who follow him through thick and thin and sometimes suffer down in, as the minister said, in the FOI talk that he gave, that he let the MDT in on. He talked about the rank and file believers most important, and sometimes the only way that you all get a platform is to form these blog talk radios or online all this. And I've listened in on several occasions. I really get fired up about it, but I don't want to superimpose myself what I think. And now let me ask from this point forward. Don't call me brother minister. Just, I know it's hard to get you, but just call me brother Robert.
I remember, brother. You know, so forgive me, brother.
Yeah.
You always said call your brother. I'm your brother. You don't want no title, yes, sir. Brother Robert.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you on the show, beloved. Good to have you
I'm glad to be here, brother.
Yes,
know,
sir.
These titles that we have, you know, I serve in another man's pleasure. And if he decides that he's not pleased and he does not want to use me in this capacity, and I'm no longer brother, so-called brother Steve Minister, then what, I'm nothing now? Are you kidding me?
That's right.
Am I going to quit the mosque and then all of a sudden now I don't come to the mosque no more? When Richard Nixon resigned post of the President of the United States of America, did he renounce his citizenship? Are you kidding me? I'm a citizen of God's nation, and my greatest title is Muslim, but underneath of that is brother.
That's right. I want to say assalamu alaikum to brother Holy War. Holy War is on the phone too, I know.
Well, alaikum salam, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, beloved. Good to have you on the board, too, brother.
Brother, the honor is all mine, sir.
Yes, sir. Brother Robert, I'm sorry, brother, I cut you off. I just got so excited. I forgot that Brother Holy War was on the phone, on the line, on the show, trying to help Sister Gidget hold it down. And so I just had to speak to the brother. I didn't want him to think that I disrespected him and came on the show and then, you know, didn't acknowledge him.
Oh, no, sir, brother. Not at all.
And, Brother Rakim, are you still at work?
You know something? Thank God I'm on my way home now. I think I did something terrible. I think I actually underpriced this job that I'm doing, and I actually got to come back early in the morning to do it. So.
Okay. I was just wondering because I'm hearing a lot of noise, and I thought maybe you were still at work. I'm sorry.
Way coming straight. If anybody know anything about Mississippi, I'm coming from Vicksburg, Mississippi, going back to Jackson, sister. So it's I'm tired. And y'all keep me company while I'm on the road. I really appreciate that.
Okay, well, can you kind of, I don't know if that interference is coming from you, Sister Khadija. Can you tell where it's coming from?
I'm not sure.
Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to mute my phone, and you tell me if the noise has stopped.
Okay.
I'm about to mute it.
There you go.
Yep, that's you, Brother Rakim, as usual. But listen, let me get on with the show, y'all, because I have a lot of questions, and then I have some questions online that these sisters are asking me. And let me go and get this out the way right now before Sister Shaka gets upset with me. She wanted to ask Brother Minister Robert.
Brother Robert, I'm sorry,
about, oh, goodness, where did the question go? About relationships. And her question is about the term, how long? Let me see. She says the courtship process should be anywhere from 3 to 6 months, and a decision is expected to be made on whether to get married. Do you think this may be playing a part in why marriages don't last too long in the ranks? Also, one of the 7 units for the MGT is how to take care of your husband. Should we put together a family planning class for both FOI and MGT to better get ourselves prepared for marriage so we won't fall out of marriage so fast? That's from Sister Shaka Muhammad.
Well, what I found, and thanks, Sister Shaka. Thank you, Sister Shaka, for that question. What I have found is that, you know, as individual Muslims, we are not whole. See, marriage is 100% and 100%. And
right.
if you're not 100%, you can't give 100%. And sometimes we're real anxious to get involved in that. We're looking for that perfect mate. Well, we ain't perfect. You know? And so what I found is, this has just been my experience over the 25 years, is that we got to help self first, then others. How am I going to be qualified for a mighty MGT if I'm not really an FOI?
Come on.
How are you going to be prepared for an FOI if you're not really an MGT?
That's right.
So no wonder the things fail, because, again, we're going at it, and our understanding of teaching the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is as thin as, icing on a Twinkie or something. I don't know. Our understanding is so thin of what Allah has revealed to his servant, then of course we're going to be failing, because we're actually in our mind compounding the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the teaching of Master Prophet Muhammad. In truth, our minds are still operating on a Western European Christian paradigm. We just do it in the name of Islam. And until we really understand what Brother Jihad's question was, how do we go from mosque to nation, then we'd understand that as Muslims, we are community. Who among us is thinking about where's a parcel of land that we can acquire together, build us some houses, so that when we build our houses, then we build us a mosque or at least a place, a masala, where we can all go pray if we won't make Friday Jumu'ah prayer or our 5 daily prayers. Where is our swimming pool for our women so that they can swim during their time, and maybe our boys and men can swim during their time? Where is our corner store that doesn't sell beer, liquor, straight shooters, condoms, reefer paper, cigarettes, tobacco, you know? Where is our movie theater that doesn't show what should be triple X movies? You know, what is our culture? Where are our singers? Where are our dancers? Where are our writers? Where are our physical, our artists? See, that's part of the problem. Part of the problem, again, goes back to the fact that we don't understand how valuable family is as the cornerstone of nation. And the cornerstone of family is marriage. But the cornerstone of marriage is two whole human beings coming together, not getting 50-50. This ain't Teddy Pendergrass talking about a 50-50 love, 30-70 love. It's 100 and 100. So we've got to really get into those units, dear sister. And yes, I agree, concur, that there has to be some kind of process by which what the sisters are being taught has a mirror in the FOI, and what the FOI is being taught has a sort of mirror in the MGT, so that we both can be on the same page. Sisters are taught certain things in that class. I don't know what they're taught in there. The key to my longevity in this post over 25 years has been staying out of MGT business. That's the key. Any of y'all aspiring ministers out there, student ministers out there, the key is stay out of the MGT, brother, and you will last. But anyway,
absolutely.
The point,
Sister Gidget, there's another question on the line.
Okay.
I'm gonna let Brother Robert finish his point, and then we're gonna take the question.
So I guess, wrapping up, it boils down to the fact that if right now, sister and any brother that's listening to this phone call, to this Blog Talk Radio, and listen to the archive, go back with a mind after prayer, after Fajr prayer in the morning. Read a little bit of the Holy Quran, the Psalms of David, anything else you want to do. But go back and read over the Student Enrollment Actual Facts again and a couple of the lessons and tell me that you don't see something different in it than you did when you first recited or the first time you received these lessons. That goes to say that, sister, we got to relearn and reintroduce the teaching to ourselves so that when we look out at somebody, we're really looking at them, not that he's, ooh, look how fine, look at that big hairy chest Negro right there, or look at that fine, voluptuous sister right there. She got a beautiful face and a nice full figure. Her garment's a little tight. I know something's up under. I can't wait to get with that. But instead, I'm going to listen to her open up her mouth. And when she opens up her mouth, it reveals who she really is. And when he opens up his mouth, it reveals who he really is. You know, beauty's only skin deep, and sometimes our knowledge of the teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is only skin deep too. I'm sorry. Go ahead, next question.
Yes, sir. Okay, Sister Khadijah, we're gonna take one more question, and then we're gonna continue on.
Okay, this caller is area code 314484.
You're on the line.
Walaikum
salam. Who are we speaking to?
Brother Rasul.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Rasul. This is another Administrative Nation building. Good to hear from you, sir. You have a question for Brother Robert?
Sister Gidget, is this a board meeting or something?
No, this is just my family, my love, my support, that's all. And Brother Rasul is my brother, because he's also an alpha. So he not only is he my brother in faith, but he is my alpha brother as well. How you doing, Brother Rasul?
Oh, I'm doing good today by the grace of Allah. No, I'm just listening in, and just want to make you know, I'm listening, I'm chiming in, and I'm enjoying the show. And I just want to say that I don't have long before I board this plane. I just want to, you know, just come in and say that, Brother Robert, correct, right? I want to say Brother Minister, I've been listening. I just want to say that, you know, that question that Sister Chaka posed through you, Sister Gidget, you know, about relationships and courtships, you know, I just want to say that When we come together and we you know, go into courtship, we shouldn't just go into courtship, just looking, because we want a husband or we want a wife. You know, it's more to it than that. We have to look at also the substance and take that 3 to 6 months, to really get to know, who it is that you're interested in, that you're in courtship with. That way you don't just go in saying, okay, she look good or he look good or, she has a nice body or he has a nice or whatnot. You know, you go in actually trying to find out what it is about this person, and what it is that can bring you two together, to make it work, instead of just going and just actually saying, okay, I found somebody I want to get with, she accepted to go into courtship with me and, I'm going to make her my wife, Take that 3 to 6 months and spend that time really getting to know that person. That way, at the end of that duration, you have in your head, whether or not you want to proceed or not. you know, instead of just saying, okay, we're gonna go ahead and give it a shot anyway, you know, and then end up, you know, being a failure or whatnot. I hate to use the word failure, but you know, that's the closest I can get to what I'm trying to say. But you know, it's important, you know, for us to do that, you know, when we're coming together. That way when we do come together, we know exactly, you know, who and what we're dealing with, and you're getting the best substance out of that marriage, the thing that actually makes it work. I just wanted to just expound on that a little bit. You know, I'm really enjoying the show. I just got a little time before I get on this plane, so I just wanted to, you know, I promised my sister I was going to make sure that I came in, and you know.
Well, thank you, Brother Rasul. You have a wonderful and safe trip back from Arizona, and I'm looking for that CD real soon.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have a pushing. We're gonna have a pushing. He had to put me on the shelf for a little bit because there was a few things we had to do to kind of, you know, clean it up a little bit and make it put a little more quality in it versus, and then also, you know, serve it to the people that type of audience. They love that old school, you know, R&B soul. You know, so we kind of,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir. I'm gonna get ready to make my move. I just want to, you know, just come in and, you know, and touch bases and everything and say, you know, I'm really enjoying the show. You know, this show right here. It's something to look forward to every week. I just want to say you're really enjoying it. So you guys go ahead and keep pushing and everything, and I'm going to listen before I have to make my move.
All right. Thank you, Brother Rasul. I come on my leg, come and be safe.
Okay. Waalaikum salam. Thank you, fam.
Yes, sir. Okay. I know we kind of got off subject a little bit because we were talking about relationships. Thank you, Sister Shaka, for your question. But we're still on mental separation. And so, Brother Robert, I want to ask you about the institutions of higher learning and the curriculum, because when we look at our historical black universities, there is a lack of historical and theological teachings that are critical for our future development. Those teachings are missing. And along with what is being taught, there's still that mental preparation for institutional slavery because they're still not teaching our young people to go out and be entrepreneurs and to have businesses of their own and really develop, but they're teaching them and preparing them to go into an industry that's going to enslave them for 30 years and they can draw a pension. So how can we as a people impact the curriculum within our higher institutions of learning?
Wow. Starting with our MUI and our Nation of Islam affiliated schools. Because these institutions, when you look at them, the land grant colleges established under the Lincoln administration during the time of Abraham Lincoln, they were twofold. One was to help the Negro, the emancipated Negro, be somewhat self-sufficient and useful to the Caucasian. In one sense. And really, if you really look into the history of Abraham Lincoln, he attempted his best, he tried his best to separate us, to colonize us, to Haiti and other places. Yes. And there's an institution called the American Colonization Society, which settled thousands of our people in Liberia. So there always was two mindsets. One was to either make us good tools and slaves or continued slaves or servants within the social, political, and economic confines of America, or to help us be self-sufficient so they wouldn't have to worry about us and get the blood of our enslavement off their hands.
Mm-hmm.
The other one died because Lincoln gave up on colonizing us. The American Colonization Society eventually, in a sense, went out of business. And so only thing that was left was to make us better tools for this enemy here. So we were never taught what is being taught at the elite colleges of America, at the Wharton Schools of Business, at the Harvards and the Yales and the Browns and all of these the institutions of higher learning, the only thing we're learning to do is to be better citizens of a dying civilization. So you go back again to MUI. And no, we're not necessarily off topic, because I disagree slightly with you about being off topic with what Sister Shaka said. Because the truth of the matter is, a strong family equals a strong nation.
Yes,
we
sir,
can't
absolutely.
Even talk about, Brother Jahad's question is still on point, because we can't even talk about a nation if we can't talk about a strong family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our ties and relationship. So it starts again with our men and women coming together. And if you think about it, some of us came out of this world, we ate the pig from the rooter to the tooter. We smoked more reefer than Acapulco could produce, snorted more cocaine than Peru could grow. Drank more Jim Beam. We put the beam in Jim. Okay? Budweiser didn't make us wise, but we still were drinking that mud. You feel me? All of that. With all of that being said, we came into the teachings, we cleaned up our sperm, we cleaned up our eggs, and we gave birth to some children, and in one sense, they never ate no pork. And unless we lost control of them, they never smoked no reefer, drank no liquor. They might experiment and we didn't know about it, but for the most part, our children don't know nothing about that world.
Right.
They play gangster, but they're as dumb as a doorknob when they get out there. But because they have been brought up under supreme wisdom, they wind up rising to the top even of criminal activity because of the wisdom that they have. And once they get into the game, they're taught to master it. Isn't that something? But anyway, my point is that the relationships are important. We have to teach our children. We have to take the supreme wisdom and treat it like it is. It's revelation. We have to stand on the supreme wisdom and create a curriculum from the supreme wisdom, from kindergarten to PhD.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Yaqub, remember, Mr. Yaqub finished all the schools of his time by the time he was 18. Then why the hell we got to go through all of this to be a PhD if Mr. Yaqub, the maker of the devil, finished all the schools his time by the time he was 18? We're being robbed going to college. We're being robbed to get a master's and a PhD. We're just paying money for stuff that our children literally could have by the time they're 18 or 19 years old. But we have
That's
to make
right.
it on the basis of the supreme wisdom. There's a brother named Rashid Muhammad, his former name was Anthony. He wrote a book about the supreme wisdom, and I think you might be able to get it online. And I'm trying to find it so I can give you the name of it. Oh, here it is. But the book is called Nation of Islam Decoded, Sciences of Mankind by Brother Rashid L. Muhammad. Used to be known as Brother Anthony out of Compton, Mosque number 54. This brother wrote a book, and he goes into the supreme wisdom, and he talks about all of the industries and sciences that you can find in the supreme wisdom. So when we talk about the water is, you know, 100,685,000 square miles, the land is 57,255,000 square miles. Okay. There are sciences in that. Oceanology is a science. Okay? How do you know it's producing land? Mineralogy is a science. Agronomy or agriculture is a science. In our teachings, in our lessons, is a whole universe, is my point. That's why I'm so hyped on the supreme wisdom. Is a whole universe in our teachings that we literally, if we stand on that, we can build a university school system from kindergarten through PhD. So that is how you do it. Once we have put in our children's minds and we send them off to college, and we put Islam in them and give them, as the minister said, a support system when they go to college, hell, they'll take over the college. They'll take it over. Muslims go and take over mode. Just a little bit of wisdom I had in the 70s before the nation fell. Now, everything I got involved in college system, and I mean, no, I'm not being disrespectful, I was either the president or vice president of. It's not because I have any innate leadership qualities. It's because of the wisdom of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that was present. There were plenty of smart people, but hell, they didn't know what to do with the smartness that they had. The teachings is the key. I'm going to keep going back to the same thing I started with. The teachings is the key.
Yes, sir. Okay. Brother Jihad, did you want to ask a question before I move on?
No, ma'am. Go right ahead, sister. He's answering everything. He's answering everything. I mean, it's like he's tuning in, so I'm fine.
Yeah, he always does that.
He makes my job so hard.
Okay. I wanna go to a different place now, Brother Robert, because I have this topic on my show several times. Pardon me. And this is something that really and truly bothers me, and I guess I'm going to keep putting it out there until I'm satisfied, which I know I'm never going to be, but I'm going to do it anyway. In the development of a new world order, in the development of a reconstruction of the black community and the black family, I have a problem with churches, and particularly, and I'm saying churches because this is the only place that I've seen it done. I haven't heard of it in a synagogue. I haven't heard of it in any Buddhist temple or anything of that nature. But in the Christian churches in particularly, I've seen it. I've heard it. The condoning of homosexuality. And so what I'm seeing as my mind traveled to elevated places is a kingdom again, or a city of Sodom and Gomorrah that's being, you know, constantly developed. And these young children who are caught up in the midst of this madness in their sexuality is being condoned by using the word of God. You're telling these children that, okay, you know, God accepts you the way you are, and the way you are is acceptable to God, when we know better than that. And not to say that we're condemning our people for their sexual preferences, because we're not condemning them, but we're condemning those acts. And I want to know, you know, how do we really address that? Because a lot of our people are caught up in that. How do we address that and try to issue a point of correction, because it is critical to their morality?
Well, sister, the way I answer that is you be what you want them to be. You know, if they talk about gay power, you talk about straight power. But really talk about righteous power. You have to be what you want them to be. Minister Farrakhan's way is the only way. You know what I'm saying? The way that
the minister handles
them is the way. You stand for what you believe, but you love them beyond their activity. You love them
because you
know that I and all of us that are on this line have been a victim at one point or another of delusional thinking. Self-delusion, and we've been deluded by others or confused by others. And we have been and are right now the recipients of divine mercy and grace. We're Form 4 fortified. That's about everybody that's in the nation now that's following the minister. We've been given, the reset button has been hit. And when you have been a victim of self-delusion or delusional thinking, and Allah has given you the benefit of grace and mercy, then you have to extend that same grace and mercy that Allah has given you to others. But the time is coming when all tugs got to sit on its own bottom. and everybody's going to answer for what they've done or what they're doing. And so the homosexual is going to have to answer. The lesbian is going to have to answer. But so is the fornicator, the adulterer, the liar, the thief. You understand? We're all going to have to answer for what we've done if we aren't, on the road of redemption. Let me put it like this. Many times I talk with the Christian brothers and sisters, and I say, they say, you know, Muhammad, you speak a lot of truth, but too bad you don't know Jesus. I said, well, I don't know all about that, Reverend, that I don't know Jesus. I said, the question isn't whether I will know Jesus or not, because Revelation 1 tells us that all eyes will see him, even them who pierce him, and all tongues and nations and kindred will mourn and wail because of his coming in the clouds of power. I said, so there's not going to be no problem with us knowing Jesus. The question is, will he know you? Well, he sees himself in you. So, Rev, remember what the scriptures say. The scriptures said that on that day, many will come to him saying, Lord, Lord. He'll say, get away from me, you workers of iniquity. I know you not. So everybody,
right.
every knee is going to bend. Every tongue, every head is going to bow. Every tongue is going to confess. But when you do, will he know you? Are you like unto him? And the question is, no, because, sister, I'm not so much worrying about homosexuals multiplying like Bebe's kids. I'm worrying about our lack of productivity. Birds are making more birds. Fish are making more fish. Caterpillars are making more caterpillars. Homosexuals are making more homosexuals, but Muslims ain't fishing and making more Muslims. That's what's worrying me. So I put it like this. The church is exactly what it was made to be. Nothing more, nothing less. And don't let anybody fool you about the synagogue. The Reformed Jews accept homosexuality. In fact, a lot of them are at the root of it, this gay power stuff. Wherever you look in the literature of this world, see, this is why we really got to study the secret relation between blacks and Jews. The Jew is so involved in everything. There's a book by a man and our brother Cedric Muhammad, the great economist and helper of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He has his own talk show and article and column and all that, the Black Electorate. There's a man that he interviewed named Steven Silberger who wrote a book called The Jewish Phenomena, Seven Keys to Enduring Wealth of a People. This man wrote openly all the things that the Jews control and all of the big Jews that are in control of everything from publishing to Hollywood to Broadway to Madison Avenue to retail to investment banking to everything that controls not only the purse strings but the intellectual currency of this country in terms of professorships, in terms of politics. This man wrote it, and he wasn't doing it to hurt his people. He was doing it in a sense like bragging, like saying, well, here's how we succeeded. And the Jews said, man, you better take that out of circulation. He didn't get a real good reception from them because he bears witness to everything that the secret relations told us is at the root of their ability, making up maybe 2 or 3% of the population and controlling 90% of this and 100% of that. So I'm going to the fact that at the core of all of these movements, remember now what the minister said about our dear beloved president. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, our dear beloved president, he said he was selected before he was elected. Who selected him? Who elected him, but who selected him? Certainly they couldn't elect him by themselves. But they selected him before they elected him. Israel ain't got a better friend than President Barack Obama. They ain't got a better friend than him. He's given them everything they wanted and some, and he's gotten kicked around like a political pinata. He's been beat all up by them because they're getting whatever they want to from whoever they want to. It don't matter whether Republican or Democrat. So my point is, yes, I'm getting back to your specific point about that, is, sister, I try to operate from the principle that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave to us, and I would ask us to consider this. Don't condemn a dirty glass. Just set your clean glass up beside it. Let's set up,
yes,
what good male-female relationships look like. Let's set up what good heterosexual relationships look like. Let's set up our system by which we take care of our elders and our pioneers in the Nation of Islam without letting them rot away in nursing homes or being abused by relatives that are siphoning off all of their wealth that they worked for all their years, only to, when they bury them, start fighting over the property and mama's fur coat and all this kind of crap. Let us build school systems by which, even if our children go to the public school, we can be like the Indian or like the Jew, that when them children come home, they still come home to a culture or being acculturated with the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, folkways, mores, norms, and values and attitudes of Islam as taught to us by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that he got directly from God's mouth. Let us do that. Let us set up business that's not crooked, that's not pushing it up to the line, that may be legal, may be legal in this world, but is not really ethical according to Islamic way and tradition. Let us build something that shows them here's the better way. Now, you know, it's hard to condemn a man that's out there selling dope if we ain't got a job for him. And it's kind of hard to condemn somebody for being in a homosexual relationship, particularly if it's been monogamous, if all of us is running around like whores and pimps. It's kind of hard.
Wow. Yes, sir.
So when you've been, like I said, when you've been a victim of delusional thinking like I had been, but have become the recipient of divine grace and mercy, you begin to hit the reset button and you begin to look at things a little bit differently. And it's not that I'm not hardcore. I can go hardcore with the best of you, sister. But in truth, the bottom line is that my heart is softened for others, and I'm a lot less self-righteous than I was before, because Allah has shown me infinite mercy, and I want to extend that mercy to all. But His judgment is coming. Let me close this point with this, too, while I'm thinking about it. Some of us don't really understand that even in hereafter or in heaven or in hell, there are different gradients of people. People aren't all on the same level. Well, there's no importance among officials. Yeah, that means don't get the big head about the thing. But I want us that's on this line and whoever listens to this archive to understand. In Surah 56, Allah says in the Holy Quran that there are two levels of people that are in the hereafter. The foremost are those who are out front, who came from the latter times, from the former times. And now there's a lot of them, the majority of them are from the latter times. That means those who fought, bled, died, and sacrificed before the victory came. And then there is those on the right hand, meaning they're believers. No, God is not going to not reward the work of any good worker, any believer. But there's a difference between the foremost and the believer. And then when you go to talk about people who's in hell, they're disbelievers, yeah, they're going to be in hell. But guess what? The lowest depths of hell are reserved for hypocrites. So even in hell, there's gradients. Let us get this thing twisted. If we're going to be in Islam, then hell, we should be all in the foremost. And if you're going to hell, just be a full-blown hypocrite and go on to hell and save us the damn trouble and get the hell up out of our nation so we can get on with building it. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Whoa. Yes, sir. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, Sister Khadijah, do we have any questions out there before we move on?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay. I have a question from Sister. She calls herself Loving Mr. Muhammad. Okay, Brother Robert, she says, what advice would you give a single sister that has trust issues and has been mistreated by men, may it be by her ex-husband or family members, but she really wants to be married again, but is fearful. Also, she is raising four boys that she fears for because they have seen her hurt and pain.
Two ways to go about that. One is for her to become whole again. Now, you know, I don't know how people feel about the dynamics, but I can only bear witness for myself. Your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth. You heard what's come out of my mouth. If you're convinced that somehow, some way, that I'm a follower of L. Ron Hubbard, then you haven't been listening to this show. But for me to tell you, Sister Gidget, you know who he is. I'm telling you straight up, I am not the same man I was when I went out to California in 2010 and went out to the celebrity and studied Dianetics and what those people taught me out there or what I experienced.
Yes.
I got some demons released from me, sister. My issues with women. And you know personally that when I came back, I wasn't the same person. And you know the problems that it caused. Because
yes,
I used to be setting a button on everything. On everything.
Yes,
I'm telling you straight up, sisters and brothers. So I don't know why you feel about Dianetics, whether you got trust issues with that or whether the apostle, how can he be right on the mother plane? How can he be right in rebuilding the nation? How can he be right to call the million man march and suddenly he's wrong on Dianetics? Come on. We got some demons that we need to get exercised. And if the teaching of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, prayer, fasting, reading the wisdom, listen to the tapes, solve your problem, then may Allah bless you and I'm happy for you. But as for me, I know I had to go some places and being taken some places that I had been hidden from me a long time. When I found out some of the things that had happened to me as a child, that led to the way that I related to females, then I understood exactly why I'm not the same person that I was when I went out there in 2010. So I would suggest, it's up to you now, every individual's got to make a choice, to really get all off into the Dianetics and find out who you really are to release those pains and things that have been done to you. Second thing, some cases, as much as we want relationships, sometimes as much as we would like to have a companion in our lives, sometimes, sister, you might just have to raise them boys until they're grown, and then after they're grown, say, son, I love you. It's time for mama to get on with her life. I don't want to bring another man into this relationship because you have seen what happened to me. Let me allow you to grow up. But I'm going to find me a man. I'm going to be happy. Mama going to be all right.
Right.
At some point, son, you have to say, I've got to give myself to Allah. I've got to be a bride to Allah. Now, I know that's a hell of a thing coming from a man. And a man ain't going to go 3 months without trying to seek out, you know, a woman and all that kind of stuff. But some of the brothers, we need to be the same way, too. We need to not be settling for stuff. Some cases, man, we need to be fasting, man, and all that, and praying and fasting and reading and studying and all that, and not being a monk, but after a certain point in time, man, you got to make yourself ready for the next woman because the next time should be the last time. All of us. If our relationship ain't working right now, then our next time, if there is a next time, should be the last time. Don't make the same mistakes you made before because then, you know, you've repeated them because you didn't learn from history. Look for the signs. Know the signs. And if that person ain't whole and got issues with women, why does a man beat a woman? What issues did he have? What happened to him when he was a child? You know, men get abused by women too. Meaning, as children, boys get molested by grown-ass women. Excuse my language.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they turn out, they really, sometimes women take out on boys, on their baby boys, what they wanted to take out on their fathers, but they couldn't take out on them, so they took it out on their baby boys. That boy grows up with an internal hate for women. And so when he gets, he don't even know why he's dogging a woman out like he is, not knowing all the time that he has been abused too. Oh, yeah, men got some issues too.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Sister, my suggestion to you is that look into the dynamics, find somebody you can trust, get into the auditing, and get yourself healed. If fasting, prayer, and the teaching of Allah won't do it to you, I ask you, just on my personal strength, if you trust me as your brother and one who you know and see as a strong help of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, I'm only asking you, look into it for yourself. And if it works for you, I pray Allah that it does. It worked for me. That's all I can tell you. I am not the same man I was prior to 2010. I've been
okay.
Born again.
No, go ahead, Brother Robert.
No, I said I've been born again. And then the last part is that until you have to sit down with your boys and you, first of all, have to get yourself whole from the hurt that you've had before. But in the end, the bottom line comes down to this, dear sister, is that, you know, you may have to wait until your boys are grown. It may be a struggle. It may be painful. You may want a man. You want companionship. You want all of that. But maybe your energy you have to focus on putting in them boys, making them whole, let them come up and grow up, and then your reward will be Allah will send you his spirit in the form of a well-made man.
And I also want to advise her that raising boys, the best thing that I've ever done for my sons when their father was out of the household was to take them to the mosque, and I had a community center in the area in which I live to let them be around a positive atmosphere of men, because that way that would deter everything that they learned, and that will empower them to be better men by just creating that atmosphere. So, sister, if you have your sons, take them to the mosque. Let them participate in the junior FOI class. Let them see some real men at work, and that will also help them, kind of rid themselves of some of that horror that they've witnessed in your household and in your various relationships. So let us move on because we got like the last 20 minutes and I don't want to miss out on this topic because I know, Brother Robert, this is kind of like your topic of expertise. We're going to talk about politics for a minute. So the first thing I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask you about Obama, but before I get to Obama, I want to ask you because I had Smokey Phillips, I know you know him, Captain James Phillips with the Harris County Sheriff's Department. We were on last week or week before last, and we were talking about our black politicians. You know, we don't have black leaders anymore. We have only one black leader, and that's Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. But our black politicians, we were talking about the accountability and how we go through the election process and we elect our black officials. However, our communities are still suffering. And in Houston, we're all kind of close-knit, Garnett and Sheila and all of them. You know, there's kind of a tight circle there. However, there are many communities throughout the country that are suffering, and there have been so many police-related unjustifiable shootings that have taken place. However, what I have yet to see is a gathering of our black political leaders actually speaking out about this issue, because in this year, in particularly starting at the latter part of 2011 up until present, there has been an astronomical amount of shootings involving the police, involving young black males in particular, but young black people in general, that has taken place, and I don't see that force. I don't see that wall speaking to the issue. So I want you to speak to that issue, and I want you to speak to the issue of accountability to our communities for our elected officials.
Well, first and foremost, sister, thank you very much for the question. But I'm not directing this to you, but I do get a little aggravated with black folks mm-hmm. in particular, say, you know, this politician, that politician hasn't done nothing. My mm-hmm. question is, what did you ask them to do?
Mm-hmm.
Name me out of the politicians. You remember after the Million Man March, sister, how we tried to have a black agenda meetings and all that kind of stuff. And you remember
yeah.
even on the grassroots, man, we have a short attention span. We got an attention span of a 3-year-old. You know,
yes, sir.
We talk nation, and I'm talking in the broader, more nationalist community. We talk nation, but it's mm-hmm. more rhetoric than it is reality. You feel me? So
yes, sir.
What happens is that we sit down and we have we don't set. Name me 5 things that we agreed on in Houston that our black politicians needed to do and that we were going to hold them accountable for. You can't name them, even though we've had this discussion 1,000 times during our LOC and LAC meeting.
Yes, sir.
So if we, you know, the question is, State Representative so-and-so, he did nothing. I always ask people, what did you ask him to do? Name me 5 things that we sat down in a room like the Jewish community does, or the labor union does, or the insurance special interests do, or the petrochemical industry does, or the gay and homosexual lobby did. Name me 5 things that we sat down to. Here are some lines in the sand you better not cross, otherwise we're going to throw you out of office. Name them. You can't name them. You don't want to know why? It's because we don't have an agenda. We're like petulant children. When we don't get our way, we put our thumb in our mouth and start screaming and hollering and holding protests. Like Sister Ava says, when we protest all the time, it's a sign of our powerlessness. It's a sign of our just being like that. So when, at what point, as Minister Parker said, politics without economics is symbol without substance. At what point are we going to take this projected that in 2015 we're going to get $1.1 trillion out of this economy? So the question is, at what point do we marshal our financial resources? And you know what? We may want Barack Obama, but God may give us Mitt Romney. So let me ask you a question. If Mitt Romney is elected president and he has a Republican Congress that's going to do this thing and particularly do it on us, why don't we marshal our economic resources and cancel Christmas? And say, you know something? You can dog this out if you want to. We're canceling Christmas. What does that mean? That means we're not going to be out there shopping and giving our money away to you crackers. We're just going to hold on to our money so that you're not in the black at the end of the year. You understand what it's like that when black people decide that enough is enough and we ain't going to take it no damn more, that you're going to show us some respect. When are we going to learn to punish our enemies and reward our friends? Instead of rewarding our enemies and punishing our friends. These people mm-hmm. are only what we allow them to be, sister. These politicians, in their good and their bad form, are only a reflection of the dysfunctionality in our own community. Politics without economics is symbol without substance. You can vote for them in Third Ward, Fourth Ward, Fifth Ward, Sunnyside, South Park, Acres Home. You can vote for them. But guess what? If they got to go downtown or the Galleria to get their money, then who pays the piper calls the tune.
Sister Gidget.
That's where I am with that.
Yes,
Sister
sir.
I love politics. You know I love politics. I can walk out. I can wake up out of a dead sleep and start talking politics. That ain't a thing.
Yeah.
What I've learned is that Nation of Islam, again, we're only so deep in it. We like rhetoric. We like those hot buttons. We like to say those things to get a little rise from the crowd. Politics ain't nothing but poly tricks. Yeah, okay, all that sounds good. But politics is the art and science of governance. Government is how the boxes are arranged. President, vice president, judicial, executive, legislative branch, agency,
mm-hmm.
department, all that. How your boxes, CEO, CFO. That's how your boxes are arranged on an org chart. Okay? That's government. But
yeah.
governance is how those boxes relate to one another, and politics is how you get them boxes to do what you want them to do.
Sister Gidget.
In the white man's world, it's based upon a Machiavellian concept of manipulation, huh? And really downright Yaakovian divide and conquer.
Yes, sir. Wait a minute, Brother Robert. I think we have a question. Brother Jahar?
Yes, ma'am. I just got breaking news. I just wanted Brother Robert to be aware that they're just now pronouncing the transition of Reverend Moon of the Unification Church.
Young Moon.
Yes, sir. I just want. I didn't know if y'all heard that. I just saw a breaking news. I just wanted to let y'all be aware.
Yes, sir. Well, for whatever good that he has done and for the reception that he and his followers gave the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in South Korea during his world tour, and the good that he did in helping us with the Million Family March and the promotion of marriage and family, I pray Allah that he's pleased with him to that extent.
Yes, sir.
And
May
Allah be pleased with him and the good work that he's done.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Brother Jahar, for that.
Yes, sir.
And just putting an exclamation point on that, the Koreans came over after the Korean War, raggedy, hungry, naked outdoors, and yes, they got help from the government, like the Vietnamese, and blah, 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 blah. But you don't hear them complying, crying, and complaining about nothing. Let me give you an example. This is the 7th anniversary of Katrina. When Katrina struck, and those busloads of people came in here from New Orleans to Houston, Texas, do you know that the Asians, I don't care whether they're Vietnamese, North Korean, or Korean, Chinese, or whatever, they were evacuated with our people on those buses. Do you know they never spent a night on the floor of the Astrodome? That the Asian community came and got their people, and we never saw or heard from them again? But we were laying on the floor of the Astrodome, the George R. Brown Convention Center, the Reliance Center, crying and whining, help me. Help me. Them Asians came and got their people and took care of them. So my point is that you don't hear the Jew complaining about this, the white. They punish whoever crosses them. And we got to get the same way.
Sister Gidget, there's another caller.
Okay, let me go ahead and take the question, Brother Robert. Okay, you have a question?
There you go, 410.
Yes, assalamu alaikum. This is Brother Vernon.
Walaikum salam, Brother Vernon. How are you?
I'm feeling wonderful. Peace to the whole family, the nation building crew. So wonderful to hear you all. And assalamu alaikum to Brother Robert.
Walaikum salam, Brother Vernon.
And this is Brother Vernon. He's the host of our economic development show. And we're in his time slot right now. So, thank you for calling in, Brother Vernon.
So, this is a board meeting. No, I
told you, this is my family. This is just love. They showing their sister some support, and I don't know what I'd do without any of them. So,
when Sister Gidget calls, I make sure I try to answer, and I could not pass up the opportunity to hear you, my brother. I'm so thankful for the years of service that you put in, and I'm thankful for the stand that you're taking now. I was content to sit back and listen and, you know, just glean what I can glean from the topic tonight and from the discussion tonight. But when it took the turn for this last question that most, you know, the question you just answered, and when you took the lane that took it from strictly politics into economics, you got into an area that just evoked my fingers to hit the number one and put myself into the queue. So I wanted to present this to you. I mean, the talk about economics and really, really putting the economic blueprint into reality is starting to take place more and more, and I've been hearing it more and more among the community over the past year, and particularly within the past 6 months. And knowing that the upcoming event in October, the celebration of the Million Man March and the Holy Day of Atonement, the overall theme is the economic blueprint ending poverty and want. That kind of, you and what you just said, in that context, just put in mind that I'm hoping and I want to, I don't want to say call you to the table, but I'm looking for people to work with in that regard to really, really seriously put that talk into practice. Now, we came on to the nation building show and program a month or two ago, and just threw an idea out there based on the empowerment project. You know, the couple from Chicago that they were going to buy black for a whole entire year, and they did it. They did a wonderful job at it and publicized it, and it was all on CNN for a whole year. They made the decision that they wouldn't, any way that they could possibly do it, they were going to do all they could to make sure that they spent their money with black businesses. They were really going to do this thing that we talk about when we say circulate the dollar and create an economy. They were going to take trade and commerce and business and all that stuff and make it real in their families' lives, and they did that. What I'm hoping that I can do, and what I want to ask you, since you made the statement that you made and the comment that you made in answer to that question, I want to work with you and anybody who's willing to really put that into practice and start a program that springboards off of the theme for the Holy Day of Atonement, where we put the economic blueprint into practice and really seriously do that for an extended period of time, whether it's 6 months, whether it's a year, but all the vitally necessary components in consumables that we buy, water, bathroom tissue, whatever it is that we know is produced from within our nation and amongst our community, I would like to ask you, would you join an effort to make that a reality? Not just in, oh, yeah, we support our own and we do for self, but in reality, where we really turn inward and promote from within doing business amongst ourselves wherever possible for the next 6 months to a year.
Well, there was an old rock and roll song, brother, that said, put me in, coach, I'm ready to play. And let me say it like this, Brother Vernon, you're absolutely right, beloved. Let me give it to you like this in a kind of a funny way. When it came to the telecom boom, Negroes missed it. By the time we got opened up beeper shops, the white man had moved on to the internet. And by the time we got into the dot-com boom, and he made all of his money during the Clinton administration, when we finally got hip to the internet, he had moved on to Facebook, Google, and all of that. He's making money shuffling paper on Wall Street, so we missed that. Then the real estate boom came in, and Negroes start getting into buying real estate and flipping houses and blowing up the property values in our community and getting us into these adjustable rate mortgages, and we are part of the doggone problem of creating the toxic paper. Some of our own people in real estate, so we missed the real estate boom. But I'll be damned if I'm going to miss, Brother Vernon, the green boom. This green boom is ours. I'm claiming it. And it begins with the fact that we have left the land. We got to do what the messenger said. We got to go back to the land, brother. What does that say to us? That says to us that land is the basis of independence. So I talk about this green boom, brother. We start with what food, clothing, and shelter. What do we eat? This is what we've done here at Miles 45, brother. We started a co-op. Now, I know people have done co-ops and are doing co-ops. Start there. And we have found, brother, just by doing a co-op, that we have reduced the cost of our grocery money.
Mm.
And we're now generating what one could call excess revenue to where we had people kick in to start it. But we've made enough profit now we can go out and buy the equivalent of what the people are putting in without them putting in it. And we're generating a profit every other week and doing it. We're building it steady as she goes. That's one. Two, we do have a farm down here in Texas, in Winnie, Texas, a 50-acre farm where we have our own cows and we're producing raw milk, ice cream, yogurt, whey, all kind of stuff, man, cheese. You know, we got on our mom's property, we've got a small little farm that's generating okra. We're picking about 6 to 8 pounds of okra a day from it. I mean, eggplant, tomatoes, all kind of stuff is happening like that. But it all starts with the basic things. The and eventually we're going to grow into a paper goods. So if their brothers are still producing the toilet paper, we'll buy the toilet paper, and then we'll grow into the Eden Fresh products, since we don't have Clean and Fresh, the Fresh and Clean, or whatever they're called, that the brother produces. And, yeah, we should get our nation's water and all that kind of stuff, seek out that. So, Brother Vernon, my short answer to you is yes. I'm not going to miss this green boom. And even in some of our cases, every 2 weeks, the produce is so much. We get so much produce for $25, man. The stuff rots in our refrigerator. So, but I tell the believers, do not throw it away. Put it in a bag and bring it back when you bring back your crate for your new co-op, because we use it for compost to fertilize our farm. In other words, this green revolution, brother, we got a brother in the mosque that is into solar power, and there's another brother in St. Louis, I think his name is Brother Dawood. He's just a genius in that solar power piece, that renewable energy piece. What I'm saying to you, beloved, is I'm down, I'm in, but I'm not in it for oils and incense. No disrespect to people who sell oils and incense. I'm not in it for monkey hustling. I'm in it to build a real economy, circulate our dollars, and then not save money so I can go out and buy a damn Cadillac or some consumer good, so that at the end of the year, when me and Vernon sit down at the table and you say, Brother Robert, I need you to put up $2,500 and I need 10 other people to do it, I'm one of them people who say, here's my check, Brother Vernon. Let's get it on. Now, between you and me, we got $5,000. Let's see who else can do it. So we don't have to be like the rapper talking about, I got five on it. No, I got $2,500 on it. So I'm giving you my word, yes, brother. And if I can be a part of a workshop or something that you want to do during Savings Day, then stay in touch with me. Sister Gidget knows how to get in touch with me, and I'll help you maneuver through the politics of getting a workshop during Savings Day.
Yeah, and Brother Vernon is one of the owners of Freedom Paper Company, so him and Brother Camo.
I need to talk with him. I need to send him a check so he can send me some paper, man, because you know the job ain't done until the paperwork is done.
Yes, sir, loud and clear. Thank you, brother.
Well, I will make sure I get that information to you. Now, well, we down to the last 10 minutes, and I'm not going to get through all my questions. And I want to ask another question on behalf of Sister Shaka. She really working me hard tonight. She says, even though the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan has advised all believers to marry within the FOI and MGT class, why is it that a good portion of our brothers still marry lost found? Is it that a MGT is too much work financially? Also, is that considered an act of treason to our nation? And I'm not going to touch that.
I'm going to answer the second question first. I don't know if it's so much of an act of treason, but it really should. We should really give it pause. But you know, love can transcend all. And there are some cases in the nation I know of where brothers have married outside of the mosque or came into the mosque having a lost found wife, and they've done fine. They've treated their wives right and their debt. And there have been some sisters, believe it or not, who've had lost found husbands but allowed them to function in the context of the Nation of Islam and has never been a problem. Now, I've seen that. But then in other cases, man, it's like Teddy Pendergrass and daggone Harold Melvin the Blue Note talking about the love I lost. Lord have mercy. So let me answer the last question first. No, dear Sister Shaka, no, it's not necessarily an act of treason, but it can be very disappointing to sisters who have waited, who have remained chaste, who dress beautifully in their garments, who go to the classes, who do everything that they can to be a woman of God as taught to them by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, yet their reward is not a man. Sometimes that's the problem, is we're looking for a reward from a fallen man instead of an exalted man. You know, our satisfaction should come from knowing that God is satisfied with us. And at I've gotten to a certain point in time is I really don't care what anybody thinks about me, except for the apostle of God, because I know that he reflects what the Christ and the God himself is thinking oftentimes. I really have gotten to the point where, you know, I'm going to just give everything to Master Farah Muhammad. In other words, I'm going to be all in. And if you accept me, brother, then fine. Is it some hard nights, sister? Yes, there is. Is there time that I want some good Muslim conversation from a Muslim woman? Yes, it is. Is there time when I want to come home to a nice hot bowl of bean soup or salad and be treated like an MGT would treat me here? Yes, it is. But you know something? Until that day comes, I'm just going to keep toughing it out, and I'm going to give it all to Master Farah Muhammad. I'm pushing all my chips, and I'm putting it on Black Number One, him, the Black God. I'm giving it all to the man God that came to us, and I'm just going to say, Allah, whatever your will is, if your will is that I have a MGT, then let that be your will. If Allah, if your will is that I have an FOI, then let it be. But Allah, send me a well-made man, in which your spirit dwells, and let me know that it's you. Ask him for that, and watch it happen. The Holy Quran says it like this, dear Sister Shaka, to all sisters out there who are suffering as you are. Please, sisters, please hang on in there. The Holy Quran says, oh, you believe, seek assistance through patience and prayer. Surely Allah is with the patient. Why would Allah give you patience before prayer? Patience is like you have to do multiplication before you do division in the algebraic equation. You got to have patience before you pray, because if you're not patient, you won't wait for what you pray for. And our problem is we don't wait for what we pray for. We try to force it. I'm a God. I can make it happen. No, it says inshallah. That means if it be the will of Allah. Make sure you're in harmony with his will, and then you'll find a man that's in harmony with his will. And trust me, sister, whether it's in or out of the mosque, Allah will send you his spirit in the form of a well-made man. I believe that. I'm looking for it. I'm going to stand on that, and I'm going to die on that. And Sister Shaka, you'll be in my prayers when I make my rock out tonight. After I get off this line and I make my prayers, I'm going to ask Allah to send you somebody that will let you know just what Teddy Pendergrass said, so good, so good, loving somebody, and somebody loves you back, and that's a fact.
All praise is due to Allah. Okay, we're gonna get ready to wrap up, but I shared this in Brother Robert. You missed the part of the family reunion show. We had technical issues that night. And, you know, oftentimes on this broadcast, even when you're not listening, I'm talking about you. And, you know, I'm not talking about you negatively or behind your back. I oftentimes mention my minister, and that's how I refer to you. And I will explain to them on the family reunion show my attachment to my brother. I think that's my brother, my minister, and my friend. And I don't think I've ever shared that with you, but I just want you to know why and how you became so significant in my life, even though, you know, we have that sister-brother relationship, but you have been a constant inspiration to me. And for some reason, anything that you say to me, sometimes it's like Velcro. It just sticks there with me. And I've gone through so much in my life, and of course some things that you are aware of, but your words always keep me encouraged and always keep me grounded. And I shared the story of when you and I first started to really develop our relationship. We were working with the LOC prior to the Million Man March. And there was a, we were still kind of in the election process of, you know, selecting people for the various committees. And, of course, I was over youth and empowerment. And, you know, there came a political kind of situation where they wanted to see some gender balance. And I don't know if you remember her. I can't remember her first name. I know her last name was James. And she was a little petite sister, very articulate, very beautiful sister. And, you know, I said, okay, if anybody can head up being vice president of the LOC, it would be her. and you had already been elected, of course, president at that time, and they wanted the vice president to be a female. So as I'm kind of gathering the masses and, you know, trying to bring this so-called in-house election together, and I say, okay, you know, y'all nominate who y'all want to nominate, and let's just put it out there. And come to find out, they had all nominated me. And I had no clue that they were going to do that. And number two, I had no clue of what I was doing. And so I remember that the brother who was opposed to having females, I'm not going to call his name, having females involved in that process. And so after the election process and they elect, they nominated and they elected me, you know, I was kind of taken aback, and I remember you looking at me straight in my eyes and you say, "Sister, you're going to do A, B, C, and D, and if I'm not here, you follow through." And you gave me that look like, you know, I had no choice. And so I had to really come out of my shell and do what you had commissioned me to do, because there was no turning back. So through all of that, that experience of working with you, those 18, 19 months, watching you, having you grow me through this process, has brought me to where I am today. It has given me that passion and that love to get the word out, to keep our people informed, to keep them in touch, and to promote love and unity within the nation. And I just want to say I love you, and I thank you for your service, and I thank you for being that brother, and I thank you with all my heart for being that friend. And I just wanted to tell you that, because oftentimes we take people for granted, and we never know, you know, when we're gonna ever have the opportunity to say thank you. So Brother Minister, Brother Robert, I'm saying thank you so much for everything that you've taught me, and for every piece of advice, for every time I picked up the phone and I know I got on your nerves, but you never turned me away, you never judged me, you just love me and accept me the way I am. So I thank you, sir.
Wow, sister, I really didn't know that. I just thought it was my charm, my good looks and my charm and grace.
That but too.
I didn't know it was that. But thank you very much. All praise is due to Allah. One thing I know about you, Sister Gidget, is like this. If I would have got stabbed in the back, it wouldn't have meant that somebody stabbed in the back. It meant that you were dead. See, the only way I'd get
right.
stabbed in the back is they'd have to come through you.
That's right.
So I want to say to Brother Vernon and Jihad and all who have been on the line that are part of this not 3-6 Mafia, but part of this nation building family. I want to say that you don't have a better sister than you have in Sister Gidget. Continue to work
Aww.
With her. Continue to strive to build what you're building. Don't be frustrated by the bureaucracy or how the boxes work within our nation. We are a nation in progress, and we are growing. And one day, all that you are putting in and all that your desires and your wishes are out there in Radio Blog Talk land will come to fruition. The nation is a work in progress. Don't give up on it, and don't you give up. You keep working and keep working and keep working, because remember, a seed shoots a root down in the dark first, then it forges its way to the light. So make sure that you're rooted in the teachings and rooted in one another and in love of God, who came in the person of Master Prophet Muhammad, his exalted Christ, and their apostles, and rooted in love for one another. And then when you come to light, when the enemy comes, whether that enemy is internal or external, and tries to pluck you up and pluck up your faith, they'll wind up pulling their arm out of the socket, because you're so deeply rooted in the soil of faith and works. I thank you, Sister Gidget, for inviting me on this program. I pray for your success and for your health and well-being and of your son. Is that Traylon
No, that's the one that works at Home Depot, Taryn. He got bit by a venomous spider, and it lingered on for 3 days before he really knew what it was. So Now we got some organs in his brain affected with the bacteria, and he's in St. Luke's, and he's having surgery tomorrow to remove a hematoma that has developed in the area of the bite. And so he's on the anti-venom, and he's on the pain medication, and he's on the antibiotic. So, you know, Allah is God. So he's, you know, he's going to be all right.
Well, let me say this, sister, and I know you believe that.
Yes,
but
sir.
I want us to know that Allah is God is not a cliche. It's real. When I get down on my prayer rug, just like I'm going to do for Sister Shaka, I'm hitting it for your son, too. And everybody get off this line.
You,
if you make your Isha prayer, you make your night prayer, you know, I'm asking you to lift up Sister Gidget's son in your prayers and watch our Allah heal him. And by his healing, our faith will be increased. So we're going to ask you, Master Prophet Muhammad, in the name of your servant, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to heal Sister Gidget's son, parent, heal him from the crown of his head to the soles of his feet, and let him be an example of what our faith and our unity and our love for one another can call for. We ask this in the name of your servant, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, remembering your servant, the Jesus in our midst, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, asking you for your mercy and for your help. Amen.
And thank you, Brother Minister. Okay, I think we've run over. I want to say thank you again, Brother Robert, for coming on the show. Thank you, Brother Jahar, for standing by. Thank you, Queen, Sister Khadijah, for volunteering last minute. Thank you for your work. You did a beautiful job. Thank you so much, Brother Rakim, Brother Vernon, Brother Rasul, Sister Shaka, Sister Mr. Loving Muhammad, all the listening audience, thank you. One nation, one love. I leave y'all as I came. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.